Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Friday, July 1st, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. We have a very special guest today, a living legend, in fact, Mr. Eustace Mullins. And we're going to bring him on in about a minute or so. But first of all, I'd like to say I made a dramatic error yesterday in the beginning of our show. When I was talking about the price of oil in January, I said January of 2005. It should have been January of 2000. Mm-hmm. So what everyone should remember about this is that in January of 2000, the price of oil per barrel was $10 a barrel compared to $60 a barrel now. So I misspoke yesterday. I apologize for that. And also, we'd like to thank Mr. Peter Shank.
Yes, absolutely.
He hosts a show on RBN called The Peter Principle, which we appeared on last night. There was a lot of fireworks, and he is great.
It was an earful.
Yes, it was. Also, tonight at 11 o'clock p.m., Lisa and myself are going to appear on Visigoths from the Grassy Knoll radio show. And after our first hour segment, we're going to be followed by one of our favorite writers, Mr. Adam Go Rightly. Mm-hmm. So,
check it out.
That. Yeah, all the information will be on the Wing TV homepage. Now, getting to our guest today. This is someone we've been wanting to interview for quite a long time. He's the author of the monumental book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. He's also the author of this book, The World Order, A Study in the Hegemony of Parasitism.
And many other books.
Right, and many other books. His name is Mr. Eustace Mullins, and his website can be found at eustacemullins.com. So, Eustace, welcome to Wing TV.
Hi, Eustace.
Well, it's good to be on.
Oh, we're so happy that you're here. Now, we could talk for weeks and weeks about your book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. But what I want to do is, we attended a conference last weekend for the America First Party, and one of the speakers was named Mickey Paoletto. And he said that the real crux issue of everything, the root of all evil in our society, it all leads back to money and who controls it. Would you agree with that and expand a little bit more on it?
Well, I would indeed, and the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 represented the triumph of a small group of international speculators. Now, these are speculators. These are not bankers.
Uh-huh.
These are gamblers. And they turned the United States into Las Vegas. Everything is gambling in this country nowadays. The state lotteries. Now, Ezra Pound told me when he was in the insane asylum, he didn't believe that the American people would ever go for state lotteries because state lotteries are the end of government.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole country is a lottery nowadays.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Ezra Pound was considered a leading literary force of the 20th century, and he commissioned this book for $10 a week, and when the German edition came out, it was actually burnt by the German government. Would you tell us about that?
It was burned by a partner, Kuhn Loeb, called Benjamin Buttonweiser. He was the assistant commissar of Germany, and the commissar of Germany was James Conan, the president of Harvard, who perfected a plan to exterminate every living person in Germany. He was an exterminationist, uh-huh. mass murderer. And he was the president of Harvard University and was the world's leading chemist. He got his start in World War I by specializing in poison gas. He's the one that got them using poison gas in World War I.
Uh-huh.
And he became president of Harvard University.
Hmm. I understand. Now, there's been a lot written about your relationship with Ezra Pound, but when we were at that conference last weekend, some people weren't familiar with Ezra Pound and how significant he was. So could you tell us, first of all, for all those people who don't know, tell us about the poet Ezra Pound, and secondly, what happened to him after he became a thorn in the side of FDR and the war efforts during World War II?
Well, Ezra Pound was a dominant literary figure of the 20th century. Four of his proteges were given the Nobel Prize for Literature. He's the only writer in the world that's ever had a success story like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he criticized our entry into World War II as being a repeat of World War I, the government turned on him, and they had him arrested in Italy at the end of the war, flown back to Italy, flown back to Washington to face possible execution as for treason. And instead, they decided not to try him because they asked him how he had defended himself, and he said, "I will stand by everything I've ever said publicly."
Uh-huh.
and they wouldn't let him do that. So they had three government psychiatrists certify that he was incompetent to participate in his own defense. He was judged incompetent to participate in his own defense simply because he insisted on telling the truth.
Yeah. And this is a brilliant, brilliant man. So we want everyone out there to realize what was going on here. Eustace Mullins' book was actually burned in Germany because they considered the information in it that dangerous. Also, Ezra Pound, who was speaking out about the war and other things, actually was institutionalized and threatened with execution. Those are the kind of things that were going on back then.
It was certainly, it was through the your efforts that he was freed. He was imprisoned for 13 and a half years, wasn't he?
13 and a half years without trial.
Right.
And he was condemned to spend the rest of his life here. I found out by inquiries on Capitol Hill through some of the most important people on Capitol Hill, including Supreme Court Justice Tom Clark and many other leaders, that the word in Washington was that he would never be allowed to leave St. Elizabeth's alive. He was going to spend the rest of his life there.
Jeez.
This was a man who had never been tried or convicted of anything, and he was condemned to life in prison.
That's incredible.
At trial.
About your book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, the ADL considers this book anti-Semitic. Have they ever come out publicly challenging the content of this book or any of your other books?
They will not cite one word. They call it virulently anti-Semitic. They came out and when the book was originally published, the ADL immediately attacked this book as virulently anti-Semitic, and they have continued to do that since 1952.
But the book's about the Federal Reserve, right?
Right.
It's about the Federal Reserve. There's nothing in there about Jews, nothing about the Jewish religion.
That's,
nothing but the state of Israel.
That's unbelievable.
But because I identified Paul Warburg as the chief writer of the Federal Reserve Act, who was an agent of Rothschilds and part of Kudlow Company in New York.
Yep.
Now, when I was in St. Elizabeth with Ezra Pound, conferring with him 3 hours a day, he told me that no one ever criticized Kudlow Company because Kudlow Company was the most important political and financial institution in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And that and Lehman Brothers. You see, when James Conant burned the Federal Reserve book in 1955 in Germany, 10,000 copies, and bankrupted the man who put the last of his life savings into printing that book, his second-in-command in Germany was Benjamin Buttonweiser of Kuhnlo, and Benjamin Buttonweiser was married to Helen Lehman, who was Herbert Lehman's daughter, and Helen Lehman was the volunteer counsel for Alger Hiss, the most important spy in history of the United States.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, as with my first question, we could spend tons and tons of time on this, but very briefly, tell us about the process that bankers use in the creation of financial panics, depressions, wars, revolutions. What's behind the scenes going on?
Well, it's all based on the interest rate. They raise and lower the interest rate like a window shade because the Federal Reserve is set up. They have what they call open market committee. And the open market committee of the Federal Reserve determines what the price of government bonds will be on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
They can run it up or down anytime they choose, and that's how they make their money because they know in advance what the price of stocks are going to be on the following day before they raise the interest rate.
Now
so they can buy or sell and make an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
So the individual investor is totally helpless in Wall Street because he has no information on what these insiders are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
They claim that insider trading is a crime when everybody connected with the Federal Reserve is actively engaged in inside trading.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They're the epitome of it. Now, the last nine quarters, the Federal Reserve has raised the interest rate a quarter point. Where do you think they're heading with this?
Well, they're heading exactly where they were in the year 2000. This is considered the annual fleecing of the sheep.
Uh-huh.
Because first they expand credit and they get everybody on a prosperity wave, which is what the golden 1920s were, a period of expansion until we had the crash of 29. And then in the year 2000, they ran the interest rate up again. Greenspan increased the interest rate six times in 1 year,
mm-hmm.
and that was a signal that they were going to pull the plug and it was going to crash. And so they took $8 trillion from American investors, according to the New York Times. Between March and November of the year 2000, They took $8 trillion away from the purchasing power of the American people. And that's why we're in a recession ever since, and the recession will probably last 50 years.
Jeez.
Government policy today in the United States is influenced by people we call neocons. And you have very specific views on these neocons. You say that they are willing to risk all for Israel and all of America for Israel. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, yes. Well, the neocons, neoconservatives they call, were invented by Norman Podhoretz, who was the editor of Commentary, the national magazine of the American Jewish Committee and the chief organ of the State of Israel in the United States. And they couldn't call themselves conservatives because they weren't conservatives, but they called them neoconservatives, and that was a signal to everybody that this was an Israeli operation.
Hmm.
So Podhoretz boasted in his autobiography that the Cold War with Russia, our former allies in World War II, was invented solely in order to give an excuse for the arming of Israel to defend itself against the Arab countries in the Middle East. And the Middle East has been in a chaotic state ever since. As you can see by the American boys are dying in Iraq for absolutely nothing.
How do you compare the neocons to the communists of decades ago?
Oh, well, I was just going into that. The communists under Stalin were the world communists. That was the world communist movement. But Stalin murdered Trotsky in 1940, before World War II got underway. And because he murdered Trotsky, Trotsky became the martyr of the Jewish communists all over the world. And they moved into this country in great numbers. And they completely ran the Reagan administration when Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980. He brought in his entire administrative staff from the Hoover Institute of Stanford University, which was all Trotskyite communists.
Mm-hmm.
And so these Trotskyite communists moved into Washington and took over the government of the United States. And so they gave themselves a name, neoconservatives, or neocons, and that's what they are. They're Trotskyite communists. And they were responsible for the downfall of Soviet Russia under Stalin.
Yeah, very well.
Which now no longer is a power.
Yeah. Now, you wrote an article called The $5 Trillion Cold War Hoax. Could you explain to us how not only the United States and Russia, but the entire world was manipulated by this vast ruse?
Well, the purpose of central bank, the Federal Reserve is a central bank, and the purpose of central banks is war finance, because only central banks can mobilize the money and credit of an entire country in order to go to war. So they had to have central banks before you could have world wars. You see, we never had a world war during the 19th century. We've had two world wars in the 20th century, simply because the central banks by that time were well organized enough, and the Federal Reserve was enacted into law in 1913,
mm-hmm.
and that gave the U.S. a central bank. And with this central bank, the United States has been able to finance all the wars in the world ever since.
That's right.
I'm glad that you brought up the Hoover Institution. Its full name is the Hoover Institution of War, and it's at Stanford University. Can you please tell us the significance of this, because you call it the think tank for all think tanks, and you also show a link between it and Condoleezza Rice?
Well, the full name of the Hoover Institute is the Institute of War, Peace, and Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his business. The business of the Hoover Institute is promoting war, peace, and revolution. And that's what it does. I'm the only person who has ever studied the formation of the Hoover Institute. It was at the end of World War One. There were a lot of young Army officers in the United States wandering around Europe because they had no place to go. No jobs to return to. And the Rothschilds hired 2,000 of these Army officers to travel all over Europe and to gather all the information about the origins of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their reason for the Hoover Institute, and that's why they put it at Stanford University, where nobody could get to it.
Oh, that's very interesting. Now, we're going to go back to these subjects in a second, but I want to ask you about something called the cult of Baal, and how you said that it went underground after Jesus' ministry and later reappeared as humanism. So what effect has humanism had on not only society, but also our educational system?
Well, humanism now masquerades under the name of secularism.
Mm-hmm.
See, Bill O'Reilly talks about, he never mentions humanism, he talks about secularism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about the old cult of Baal, which now has a new name. It was known as humanism for many years, and now suddenly O'Reilly and the others, they've got a new word, secularism, and no one knows what that means. And that's how they get away with it. They change their name, and people don't know exactly what they're talking about,
yeah.
But they know that we now have this great danger to everyone called secularism. It was known as humanism for nearly 100 years, and it was the old Illuminati crowd with a new name.
So it's the same old song and dance, isn't it?
Oh, same old song. It goes right back to the time of Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus crusaded against the cult of Baal and the juggernaut and Moloch.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Jesus' time, young parents were sacrificing their children to the belly of Moloch, which
yeah.
was an iron statue heated to enormous temperatures, and then they would throw their babies into the fire.
Yeah. We are currently embroiled in what you call World War III. We couldn't agree more with that. And Americans are dying en masse, as well as Iraqi civilians in Iraq. I'd like to know what your views are on the war on terrorism and what's planned for Iran and possibly Syria.
And also Israel's behind-the-scenes involvement in it.
Oh, it's behind everything. Well, terrorism itself is terrorism is not a threat to the Arab jihadists. It's a threat to every American citizen because the sole victim of terrorism is the American people
mm-hmm.
by its own government. You had the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City, and you had the
right.
Waco Holocaust at a Christian church in Texas, and you had 9/11. All
yeah.
these were government operations. And I said publicly at the time, and I was quoted in the New York Times, that each one was a government operation, a standard government operation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's hitting the nail right on the head. Now, like us, you've been faced with a lot of criticism throughout your career. One bit of this came from a guy, a total worm, named Chip Burlett.
Chip Burlett has been writing about me. I'm his bugaboo. I'm
yeah.
the favorite target of these real funnies.
Yeah. Well, let me read real quickly.
I'm an innocent 83-year-old person who lives alone in a small town, and I'm no threat to anybody, but they constantly portray me as the greatest danger to the world and the entire world.
Yeah.
And in fact, J. Edgar Hoover himself, when he was director of the FBI, stated that I was the most dangerous man in America.
Well,
now, the reason
what,
Hoover said that was not because I was on a crime spree or
right.
anything.
You know, Eustace, we agree with that.
Yeah, and
you
that's,
are.
That's definitely a
well, I guess
of
I am. And they certainly never give up. They always maintain that I'm the most dangerous man in America because I tell the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And see, this is what we've noticed, is that these people never attack on the information or the issue. So
right.
what they have to do is they have to personally attack you. Isn't that right?
It's a personal attack, yeah. I'm the only person who's ever fired from the staff of the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. And I was fired on trumped-up charges by Senator Herbert Lehman, whose daughter was the attorney for Alger Hiss.
Wow.
Eustace, did you get to watch Bush's address to the nation the other night, and what is your take on that?
Well, the take is the same with everybody. It was total disappointment. He offered no word of advice on anything. It was a vaudeville performance, which he danced off the stage, and the people cheered, and he said nothing.
Yeah. Now, before we close today, there's much more involved in Iraq than is being relayed to the American public, especially when you go back to the days of Babylon and so forth. Why is the United States so obsessed with Iraq, or maybe I should say even the New World Order, so obsessed with Iraq, and what isn't being told to the American public?
Well, Iraq is symbolic as the cradle of world civilization, so it's enormously important to control that area, and that's why they're going after it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they never explain this, of course, to not only the citizens of this country, to the world, do they?
Yes, it's symbolic, you see. As the cradle of world civilization, the person who controls that area will control the world. It's very simple.
Yeah. Well,
but, of course, George Bush doesn't tell anybody that.
No.
Yeah, they don't
know
us
it.
A lot.
He won't talk about it. And he won't talk about an exit strategy for Iraq because he has no intention of exiting from Iraq.
Yeah. Now, lastly, Yeah. Lastly, in the Middle East, there's supposed to be this clear out, or this evacuation of the Gaza Strip, and Ariel Sharon's thumping his chest right now. What do you think of Ariel Sharon as being maybe one of the greatest war criminals in the world right now?
Oh, he certainly is. But when he leaves, there'll be another war criminal of equal stature who will immediately take his place. You know, we had Rabin, who was executed by his own Israeli people.
That's right.
Because he finally realized we had to give up some of the Jewish settlements in Palestine. And so they promptly executed him and put Shimon Peres in. And Peres knows very well he will go through a public promise of ending the Jewish settlements, but he'll do nothing about it whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, Eustace, thank you so much for coming on Wing TV today. And, you know, I don't think we've ever used the term living legend on this show before, but Eustace Mullins is without a doubt a living legend. Find his articles, find his books.
And we love you, Eustace.
Yeah.
We appreciate
everything. Well, thank you so much. Oh, I also have another title which I've come into in recent years.
Okay.
As a national treasure. Many of the people that I write for tell me that I'm a national treasure.
Well, you are.
Yeah.
I think that's because I'm passing on the wisdom of Ezra Pound to the American people.
That's true.
Ezra turned over all of his research to me. He had 30 years of research in Europe. And he turned all of that to me in 1946. So that's really how I've been able to do the work. At the age of 25, I was able to tell the people of the world exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
And, of course,
at my age,
I had no personal knowledge of any of this, but Ezra had turned all the results of his work to me, and I grew from there. I just continued to examine it.
Well, we're so glad he did.
Exactly. Eustace's website can be found at eustacemullins.com. His books are The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, also The World Order, and many others.
And it's the most important reading you'll ever do.
That's right. So, Eustace, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again, okay?
Well, that'll be great.
Thank you.
I look forward to it.
Bye-bye. All right, folks.
Wow.
Well, we're heading into the weekend. What a fabulous man. Just unbelievable. We also want to direct everyone to the Wing TV homepage. There's a review by Chris Emery on 9/11 on trial. Also, Thomas Holbrook's latest newsletter, the TH2 Underground News, is online. We just want everyone to have a good weekend.
And see you on July 4th.
That's right. Keep your eyes open. There's a lot going on.
Have a good weekend.